Welcome to the Jewish Diasporist. This is the first ever bonus episode of our podcast, so if you'd like to hear the full conversation, please check it out on our Patreon and become a supporter for as little as $1 a month. We recognize that the current moment we're in is one of profound de-assimilation. Whether on the Zionist camp or the anti-Zionist camp, people are reimagining what their Judaism means in light of the current moment. Right now, we're sitting within our sukkah, celebrating one of the most beautiful holidays within our tradition.
Sukkot is a holiday all about our connection to our community, to the land, to all of nature, and the cycles of life that sustain us. In this moment of de-assimilation, people from across the political spectrum, secular, orthodox, everything in between, are struggling to find a home within Judaism that doesn't rely on the politics of Israel-Palestine. Diasporism is one way we have approached this, and in this episode, join us on a quest as we forage a local lulav, as we localize our connection to the land and our observance of Sukkot.
This is a really powerful ritual that we realized is something that people have started doing over the last several years. It hasn't really caught on, but we're hoping to help popularize the idea, as it can provide a real profound rooting of our Judaism in the place that we live. And we hope that this sort of ritual can help us inspire other rituals that we can bring into our Judaism as we go through the Jewish year in 5785. Thank you for joining us on this journey, and we hope you enjoy the conversation. Right now, we are standing in a nature preserve on the west side of Santa Cruz, and we're on the eastern slope of a valley. Can you say a little bit about the ecosystem we're in, Jordan?
Sure. Well, this is pretty typical of this area, with a lot of oak trees, some hazelnuts, berries, poison oak.
No.
You can hear the wind through the trees and maybe the water down below.
Mm-hmm.
Why are we here, Ben?
Yeah, so this is our first official, like, Patreon bonus episode, and what really spurred me to want to have a conversation is the rituals of Sukkot, because Sukkot is only 5 days after Yom Kippur, which I think really shows the importance of the holiday within, like, the sort of spiritual flow of intention, the kavanah that we're meant to be holding over this long period of high holidays. I mean, growing up, I was always taught that, like, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur are the high holidays, but they're not. They're not the only ones. The high holidays are arguably continuing through Sukkot, the Shemini Atzeret, which is at the end of Sukkot, and also Simchat Torah, which is pretty soon as well. Like, this is a very spiritually rich time of the year,
according to beginnings, times of creation, mm-hmm. you know, of renewing our covenant, renewing our community's connection to the land. And, you know, even ecologically, this is the start of the rain year here in California.
Yeah, I mean, part of Sukkot, we shake the lulav. And I was always told that when you shake the lulav, part of it is that it sounds like rain. I mean, it is actively a rain ritual. It's almost a rain dance.
I really like the perspective that Judaism was this agricultural tradition developing in an area that was so water dependent, rain dependent. And it wasn't just, you know, because of the rain that we prepare this kavanah and keva, but because we're here, you know, in a very similar climate, we can kind of understand that the rain comes because we renewed our covenant. And because, well, there's a certain, you know, science would have some thing to say about it, but there's a deeper meaning that, like, we have to purify ourselves for us to be deserving of the rain that God was symbolizing. And so we, you know, cleanse ourselves, we prepare ourselves, and then we dwell in a sukkah for 7 days, and the walls are permeable. We see ourselves in community on the land with each other, and we harvest, you know, our what we the fruit of last year and prepare ourselves for the new one. Clean the fields and sow the grain, I guess.
Yeah, to start again. I mean, I really just want to centrally emphasize like the impetus for creating this podcast today, because I saw last night on an image taken by Oren Ziv, one of the great photojournalists in Palestine, Israel, of a Sukkot celebration on the Gaza border by a settler movement, where they created all these plain white Sukkot, these huts, all on the border that was symbolizing their hope to reoccupy, resettle Gaza. And it just really, like, was jarring to think about how that can be a way that they're seeing as central to Sukkot, as claiming the land, of being on the land. But when I've celebrated Sukkot, when we've celebrated Sukkot throughout our lives, it's always been about being together in community where we are. It's not about laying claim, exclusive right to occupy a land. It's about being on the land and being in the nature, being in the ecosystem. I mean,
being with the land, being with the community.
I mean, I always remember, sadly.
Got some poison oak down here. Careful where you step off the path.
We are not the only ones on this path today. But what I was saying is, when I think about Sukkot, I mean, the way we celebrated Sukkot as a kid, like, frankly, most of the time when people build sukkahs these days, for the frame at least, they'll use, like, either metal or, like, pre-cut wood. But when we did Sukkot as a kid, we went to, like, part of our, like, local Chavaraz celebration of it. We would build it entirely with redwood limbs, entirely with parts of the ecosystem directly around us. And it's always felt like a holiday because of that. That's deeply grounded in a sense of here-ness and doikite.
In community.
In community. In a way that I'd say runs directly, maybe not directly in contrast to the settler version of the holiday, but it really raises questions. And a lot of the time, if you're on social media, which hopefully you're not, it's a terrible place these days, but you'll see that, like, they're like, oh, I mean, I see right-wing Zionists saying, like, oh, how you're celebrating Sukkot, it's a Zionist holiday. And the thing they'll use to argue for that is the fact that the lulav, the collection of palm, myrtle, willow, and the etrog, are all plants that are native to Palestine, Israel. Of course, they'll say Israel. And they use that to kind of say that, oh, this was the story of, like, we're reenacting the huts that Jews lived in when we were exiled, or when we were fleeing Egypt before we entered the land. These are those huts. So they're saying that this is a Zionist narrative. But I don't think that's the case. And
I think it's rather like living on the land in agricultural settings. And that's totally a different like place of where this holiday actually began, in that community, you know, this Jewish quote unquote civilization and this relationship between people off in Jerusalem, though I don't want to deny the existence of other temples because that's,
of course,
you know, not real history, but
myth.
Then the relationship of what does it mean to, you know, give a portion of our grain to God? What does it mean to live together and to come together for the sake of a harvest? You know, this is the commons, and the commons is something that people share with God, and God shares with the people. And there is the inside, the community, and, you know, the forces of nature, and this is a dance, a partnership. And here we are outside trying to observe Sukkot in our own way. And that means finding our own, what Ben wanted to call, diasporist halakha.
Yeah, and that's actually really the impetus for this episode, because when I was raised, when the argument was raised that this is a Zionist holiday because of the specific plants that we put in the lulav, it got me thinking, like, what if we took the symbolism of each of these plants, the straight and sturdiness of the palm branch, the symbolism of the spine and the eyes and the mouth that the willow and myrtle are often said to hold, and instead of relying on these plants that are native to lands far from where we are, what if we took these symbolisms and rooted them here? What if instead of using a palm branch, we used a redwood branch or redwood bark? What if instead of using an etrog, a citron, we went to the Torah, which says, I mean, according to the rabbis, we decided this is what an etrog was, but all it says in the Torah is it's pre Eitz Hadar, the fruit of a beautiful tree.
So what if we used... There's quite a few beautiful trees around here.
Yeah, what if we used a prickly pear or...
It's an interesting interpretation of a tree, but tree is not a real, you know, biological concept. It's just an upright growing thing with one step or but one trunk. So maybe a prickly pear.
That we can actually, we can engage with the halakha in a diasporist way by saying, by adapting, by taking a more reform or reconstructionist approach to halakha that says that we can, it's our duty to engage with this, but it's not our duty to hold this as binding. And we can instead find, frankly, a lot more meaning in the places we are by taking Sukkot as part of the high holiday, that spiritual process of atoning for our sins and starting anew. And saying that we're going to ground ourselves in the places we are. And that's actually part of why we're out here on a walk today, because I've really been wanting to go on like a quest. I think there's something deeply whimsical about the Sukkot ritual that is lost when we just buy factory made or purchased lulavim. And instead, we go out into nature and we find, ideally, like there was a windstorm here recently, ideally we find parts that we can use and tie together, and this is our lulav in a way that really emphasizes that we are here where we are.
So what, you want to take a walk and find some different plants from different ecosystems and talk about the symbols of what we find, put together a lulav and do a little ritual?
That is my goal. That is absolutely my goal. But before we do that, I want to emphasize, like, what is the ritual? What do we do with the lulav and etrog?
Well, I would say if we want to start, we should give thanks to the plants and to the windstorm that helps, you know, create this opportunity for us, and so connect ourselves through a web of gratitude to this extensive community, this ecosystem, this biosphere that we live in. I believe then we should bind these plants together, three branches or trees or leafy plants, and then one fruit. So there's plenty of fruit. Hopefully we'll be able to find something. An acorn,
even, you know, a pineapple guava, which might not be native here, but many people here.
There are native pineapple guavas.
Wonderful, I didn't know that. Yeah. But also, I wanted to emphasize the ritual. Like, when we have the lulav and etrog together, we say a prayer, and then we face east, is tradition, which is facing Jerusalem, which again is often used to say that this is a Zionist holiday, but it's also perhaps...
Isn't east just first, and then we face south?
No, we face west, east, north. And we face east the whole time. We shake it starting east. Then we shake it to the south, we shake it to the west, we shake it to the north, and we shake it up, and we shake it down, three times each. Like, what can we get from that ritual? I think there's something deeply...
We're connecting ourselves to sacred space, to sacred time. We ideally synchronize our breaths with this and feel it through our whole body, let it tap down to the deepest part of our mind and consciousness.
Yeah.
And center ourselves in our body, in our relationship to the earth and to the sky, you know, where the rain and the soil meet to create the food that will sustain us through the next year.
Yeah.
And we honor, you know, the web of life
and the place we have within it.
Yeah. So let's go for this walk.
Yeah.
And we'll see you once we harvest or are in the process of preparing this ritual. So we've been walking for about 20 minutes. We crossed through the riparian forest over a little footbridge, the creek going under us, and
pretty dry.
We found a dry stalk of what we call California mugwort, or Douglasiana or Californica, but those are all colonial names. I'm sure it has many other names.
Yeah, we do love this plant.
Beautiful, it smells delicious. The leaves are kind of like the lips.
We're placing
straight and narrow, like a spine.
Which of upright. Which of the lulav components?
This is riparian in a sense that it could replace the willow, but it also has leaves of a particular shape. Stock.
Which replaces the mouth in the way the willow does.
Replace our willow.
Yeah, and the mouth symbolizes that we shall speak no evil into the world.
Honor our the importance of our word.
Yeah, and it's definitely one of the, it's a beautiful, beautiful plant, and I love the mugwort in the summer.
We've now come up the other side. to a much drier part of this ecosystem. We have some cows in the distance. This has clearly been grazed for probably 250 years.
Yeah.
And the ecosystem really shows it. It's covered in grass, mostly invasive annual grasses. And that's something that I've been thinking a lot for this ritual is, like, what does it mean to approach our ecosystem as a whole person and see it as a place, you know, of spiritual connection, but also a struggle to identify what we ought to be doing here, what it means to live well with each other and work together to bring about, you know, ecological restoration, we could say, but also human communal revitalization and connection and attunement to each other, seeing this ecosystem not through the lenses and stories that have been imposed on it, but for what it is.
Yeah, and part of why I'm glad we grabbed this beautiful stalk of mugwort is because several years ago during the COVID pandemic, my brother and I got kind of into foraging, and mugwort was one of the plants that we found had a huge amount of medicinal value. If you make tea with it, it can actually, it's known for triggering vivid dreams, which is kind of strange, but we did that plenty of times. So I have a feel like I have a pretty close relationship, or I've developed a pretty close relationship to this plant.
And again, we shouldn't just be seeing it as a tool, a means to our ends. It's a beautiful plant. It supports, you know, a whole ecosystem in its roots, through its flowers, through its leaves, and we should be honoring for it as it grows.
Do you want to say what blessing, what blessing we decided to use when we plucked this mostly dead stalk?
Well, I looked up the proper blessings, and there's no technical plant harvesting blessing, which is kind of strange, if you ask me. But it looks like people generally just say the motzi. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam, hamotzi lechem min haaretz. I like this blessing because it means who brings forth bread from the earth. And there's a whole deep symbolism of what bread is. It comes through relationship. You know, bread only comes into being through human connection to wheat or other seeds, to water, to microbes, to this whole chemical, biological, cultural world. And, you know, that's like us. That's like plants. You know, this web of relationship constitutes us. So by honoring God who brings forth bread from the earth, we see ourselves in relation to the world as a part of creation. And just like this mugwort, we honor it.
Absolutely. And before we go further, I want to just emphasize the idea of local lulavs. I kind of stumbled upon it on my own a few days ago, just thinking, as I said, about the symbolism and rooting it in the places we are rather than in this longer myth history. But I found a book that was, we're going to put it in the documents. It was a document that a woman named Miriam Saperstein created called The Book of Lulavs. And it was written in 2017. But the idea was exactly this, of taking the halakha, the words in the Torah, and adapting it to the places that we are. And one thing that I found was really beautiful in this document was that they chose four places, one of them being California, and put examples of what plants you might use in place of this symbolism. And I really, really do believe that it does have the potential to become a real well-known practice amongst diasporous Jews of really engaging with the earth in this time, in this really holy time.
In this holy place, in this sacred earth.
Yeah.
In where we are, recognizing that, you know, we don't have to look 2,500, you know, however many years into the past to see genuine human relationship.
Or within thousands of miles. I think that's also, we're talking about time, but we're also talking about space.
Thank you.
2, 3.